We gotta do it spy style.
The Loud House is on a mission to save the world in the ultimate spy movie.
This is our chance to be heroes. Be careful and remember to stay hydrated.
No Time to Spy, a new Loud House movie, now streaming exclusively on Paramount Plus.
You're listening to The Kylo Show, the podcast where we talk about how to keep your love on no matter what and why whole healthy families are going to save the world. And it starts right now.
Well, hello, everybody, and welcome to The Kylo Show. I'm super excited. So those of you that are listening, we have some guests with us. Yes. Guys, go ahead and introduce yourselves.
I'm Lauren Ditmore, and I came along with Rochelle, my wife. We're excited to be here.
Yes.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for having us.
These guys are good friends of ours, becoming closer friends, which I love, is just warms my heart. And I had this moment. We were talking and thinking. We went to dinner, and I'm like, oh my gosh, we got to get them on the podcast. We really do, because what they do, I'm actually just now realizing I didn't bring a tissue to the table, and I should have known better, because Rochelle often makes me cry just telling her beautiful, powerful stories of what she's doing and really what her and Lauren are doing together. So we talk a lot to our partners, and we have the honor here of Loving on Purpose to be really partners with you guys and investing in what you're doing. So this is kind of a glimpse into all of you out there that have been partnering with us. This is fruit.
Absolutely.
This is fruit right here of your investment. And so we wanted to just introduce you guys to everybody.
Well, we've been absolutely blown away by what God's already done. You know, I don't know if your partners do know this, but we have a housing program that we've been doing for the last 15 years where victims of human trafficking, and then now we've kind of expanded that criteria onto homeless women and children, and then we've watched countless women actually get access, because of our partnership with you, to the curriculum, the Keeping Your Love On curriculum, all of the family connectivity stuff, all, and we've watched just relationships between moms and their girls, and parents. Even we even have a single dad at one of our motels that we do service programming for, and he's just come alive. And this guy was 6 months ago, he was in prison, and God's restored his relationship with his kids. He's a single dad. It's the real deal.
So tell us more about this, because we didn't say the name yet of your ministry.
Yeah,
but go for it.
Go ahead.
Take
go
it away.
Ahead.
Tell these people who you are. Yes. I want them to know you as best they can.
You know, I remember as a little girl, back when churches had libraries. Do you remember that?
No.
Did your church ever have a library?
We had a directory of people's faces.
Right. Mine did. And I remember just like sitting in that little room, and I would just be drawn to every missionary book and tale that there was. And from such a small age, and I just, God had crafted my heart for more than the dreams of myself. I just, the dreams for people, the dreams of understanding who Jesus was from such a young age. You know, my grandparents were immigrants from Turkey. They survived genocide and persecution. So, you know, I grew up with a depth and an understanding of who God was and what would really last, the mark that would really last, the eternal mark that would last. And it was just planted in me so young. Yeah. And then when I was in sixth grade, it was The Cross and the Switchblade, Nicky Cruz.
I read coming that book. Coming at you hard, baby.
Right?
Coming at you hard.
And David Wilkerson. I would go to Blockbuster, and like every Friday night when it was time to rent a movie, and my parents would be like, again? And you know, when Nicky said that part where David Wilkerson said to Nikki, he said, you could cut my body into a million pieces and every piece would say, God loves you, Nikki, and I love you too. Yeah. I mean, I just, it stuck with me. It just stuck with me. And so at 19 years old, I moved to the inner city of Los Angeles. And You know, I think at the time when we looked at cities and that terminology was what it was, like we don't call places inner cities anymore. You know, some people may have looked at the city and saw the brokenness and the crime and the poverty and the stench of urine that, like, I can still close my eyes and remember from Skid Row. I mean, that was just the fragrance. But when I moved to the city, when I looked back, what drew my heart was not the darkness. What drew my heart was the treasure. And I always said I'm pretty much have a Pippi Longstocking soul, and I have spent my life
that's
on a treasure hunt.
That's actually your nickname. They actually call you.
So there's actually some people from the DA's office and in Sacramento. Pippi. I've kind of gotten that name, Pippi, and now my godson. So if Auntie you want to warm my heart, just call me Pippi.
Pippi. Yeah. There we go.
But it started there, and it was a learning and an adventure and a scavenger hunt with the love of God, the one who loves us most. In 1997, I took a job for $400 a month. Can you even believe this? To move to Sacramento.
Okay.
And, you know, and it was at a church. I won't say what church that was. It was a great church. But I remember leaving LA the day that I was moving to Sacramento. And in my flesh, I didn't want to come. Here I was. Yeah. I didn't go to India, but at least I was in the inner city of Los Angeles. You know, like for someone with my heart, it's like, let's do this. And
You Mother Teresa, but they can call you Mother Pippi.
Mother Pippi. Okay. Yeah. I'll take that one. Okay, I'll take that one.
There you go.
And I remember standing on the edge of MacArthur Park, and I had this vision, and it was notorious for drugs and crime and prostitution. And I saw this field of broken glass, and I just heard the Holy Spirit say, I'm looking for those that will walk through this field. And I met a man named Keith Newton who has been a pastor for 30 years that I met out of prison underneath the bridge, Treasure. God allowed me to meet him at such a young age, I think, to show me the potential of a life. And he and his wife have had a beautiful marriage for over 20 years. He's a senior chaplain at Los Angeles Mission. He marked me as a child beginning in ministry. And the Lord said to me, he said, you will be cut by their wounds. You may bleed. It may inflict pain. But there are diamonds that you cannot see from the edge that are in the middle that are waiting to be exalted for my namesake. And I just was like, I'm in. I'm in. And so that was the beginning of the journey. You know, it's like I think it's often we get disillusioned when we see organizations. And I love the ability to be able to market and tell a story and sell stories today. But it also can be very deceiving of movements of God because the movement of God is our next step for the one. And when we do that, you see heaven come down and kingdom grows things and he blesses things and pours out his spirit. And so while we may have an organization and lead an organization.
Which we still haven't said the name of yet.
I know. You want to say it, Lauren?
I know.
We run an organization like we've been purposely holding it.
I know.
Okay, ready?
This is building.
City of Refuge in Sacramento. We have a great team there that gets to walk along people as they're rebuilding their lives. We have 127 families that are under roof that are receiving case management, client advocacy. They get programs and life development stuff. They get access to Keeping Your Love On curriculum as part of their life plan. And really the whole goal is that when people's lives are broken, that we walk along and we partner with them while they're rebuilding and while God's rebuilding their lives and onto self-sufficiency. And it's amazing process.
And you guys have you have housing, you have motels, you have a center. What else you got? I don't know if I missed something.
I mean, we've been pre-COVID, we were in 10 schools working with about I think there was 2,500 young people over the course of about five, 6 years that we were running that, where they would go through long-term classes that we would run on school campuses, a boys program and a girls program, and called Grit and Shine, and that was a big staple of what we did with young people. We also have sports programs in the community, and 250 kids that are part of a local Pop Warner team and cheerleading, and just
is Caleb still with you guys?
Caleb's still with us. Yeah, Caleb Tate, if you're listening to this,
there it is. He was listening to hear his name. That's what he was doing.
What was cool is we had our own program at City of Refuge called City Sports. And it was great. And we did basketball camps and flag football and all that. And it was really successful in one aspect. But what we found was that our job wasn't just to be successful for ourselves. Our job was to find other local heroes and champions that were mm-hmm. from the community. And there was a guy that he's a former gang member, did prison time. Yeah. He started his own Pop mm-hmm. Warner team. And we're like, let's just get under him and not even be the face of it. Let's fund coaches to work for him for free. And have just, mm-hmm. there was this God strategy to just be in the background and support somebody else. They get the credit for it. Our name's not on anything other than whatever he thanks us for. But it's not even about that. It's finding other people and just getting up underneath them and letting them be the champions that they are. So there's that. It's a lot of great things happen. Our question is this: how do we be a neighbor? How do we show people the love of God mm-hmm. in a tangible way? Yeah. Mm-hmm. How do we be in the context of a broken community and be a solution in one way or another? Yeah. And mm-hmm. so, you know, it didn't start off doing all of that. We really, our focus was just children. Yeah. Our focus was young people.
Here's a little piece of info as well. At some point, you guys have this heart to do this thing, transform this dark place. So you decide to move there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And to live
23
there.
Years ago.
And to live in
and
the
then
middle
raise
of all
your
this.
Children.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. One of our founding verses that really God made very, very evident. I love the way it says in the message, John 1:14. Mm-hmm. It says, "And God put skin on and moved into our neighborhood."
Mm.
Wow. And there's something about proximity. There's something about closeness. There's something about mm-hmm. being in the same grocery store and living in the same neighborhood. So we live in Oak Park. It's a notorious community in Sacramento. It's, you know, some people would say it's the oldest ghetto in Sacramento. We don't call it that, but it kind of gives you some descriptors. Yeah. We love it. There's mm-hmm. so much good that happens there and so many beautiful people, but we've watched God just intersect people's lives and transform them over the last 20 years. She's been there 20 plus years. My journey there was a little different, but
what was your journey?
You should tell it because it's pretty fun.
So I was actually a washed up youth pastor and worship leader, and I was a single dad. I had gone through a divorce and had kind of resigned myself that I went back to construction. I was a bivocational pastor for a while, and then just when life combusted, I just resigned to what I knew. And. And I was happy to be a dad, but wasn't doing real well with my walk with Jesus other than I knew he loved me, but I knew ministry was not a part of my future at that point. At least that's what I was convinced of. And mm-hmm. 2001, I found myself on the corner of Broadway and Martin Luther King. And mind you, like I don't know that I was a professing alcoholic. However, I did use alcohol quite frequently to medicate and mm-hmm. to just, it was a regular part of my life and probably a little bit overuse, if you want to use that word. But I was doing what I could to just feel better. And I was at an intersection of Martin Luther King and Broadway in the middle of Oak Park. I was lost trying to find a job. That was back in the day where you didn't have GPS. You had a Thompson's Guide, right, a map that you had to find the cross.
That you could never fold back up. You could never
there's no MapQuest. There's none of that. Yeah. This is pre that. And I'm trying to find this house that I'm working on. And I get to this intersection and I see people and God just like let me see more than what I saw. And I heard God speak to me, said, I'm calling you to this neighborhood. And I was like, God, you're calling the wrong person. I don't know what you're talking about. And I saw kids that had just gotten out of a continuation school, the largest continuation school in Sacramento. And there's five cop cars and there's homeless people. And
this is hilarious.
It's crazy.
I just got a call from God. It was the wrong number.
Well, I mean, that just shows where my heart was. I was convinced God was done with me. And God took this broken man and reminded him that he wasn't done and chased after me in my brokenness. So I, from that moment, I still didn't have it all figured out. I hadn't met Rochelle yet. I didn't know that she was living and working in this community. I found my way back to a church that the pastor there, Bishop Sherwood Carthen, Bayside of South Sacramento, he just loved on me for about a year and took my two kids, and we got to sit at his dinner table every Saturday or Sunday afternoon and just live life. And he loved me back to health. And I'm serving Jesus today because of that guy. But through that purpose, awesome. Through that season, I met Rochelle, and she was running this little after school program. And she was cute too. And I was working my way back into helping with ministry and the worship team there, and met her at that point. And I just, something came alive in me, not just seeing how cute she was, but that there was this real thing happening in this community that God had spoken to me 5 years before that, saying, I'm going to call you. I'm like, what is going on? And, you know, I became her best volunteer. I had a truck and started moving things for her.
And
I could build things.
I know how this works. I am a builder. That's what we know.
I love builders.
And
best gift ever.
Gentlemen, I just want you to listen to this. Ladies love it when you get stuff done.
You
all right?
should see the things that he can make out of pallets. Like, he built me this whole, like, seriously, can we stop for a second and talk about how talented Lauren is? You should see our chicken coop. He had these pallets. He's like, babe, don't get rid of those. I'm going to make something. He built me like this little cute with a tin roof, little to put our wood in the backyard. And perfect. Sorry, babe, but this man can build.
Yeah, yeah. You and Ben got to get together and build us something grand.
Make stuff.
What I do to decompress is build things. It's my therapy. So, yeah.
It could be worse things.
It's good. Yeah. Be constructive. Yeah.
So you started volunteering for her and her after-school program. So how long has City of Refuge been happening? Like, how old is it?
We're in our 10th year right now. Okay. So it's only been 10 years. A lot has transpired. We've been married. We celebrated our 15th year anniversary and just this last September. And so God has done a lot in a little bit of a time.
Yes.
And it's been crazy, crazy journey. We started this little house called the House of Acts. Mm-hmm. And that was the early phases of City of Refuge. Yeah. And our goal, again, was to be a neighbor and to open up our doors and just invite people home. Mm-hmm. And kids that were running the streets, getting into trouble and had nothing else to do, they found their way into the Ditmores, what was our personal home, and we moved out of it and just gave
our
life
away. Is that
the
house we went to?
The first house on 38.
Yeah. The yellow house?
Yeah.
I had been on staff with Youth for Christ for about 17 years. Yeah. And so I ran after school programs in the neighborhood through Youth for Christ, raised my support as a missionary. And then I would have probably stayed there forever. And I remember when my executive director, he was retiring, and we were really this concept of City of Refuge. Yeah. Like, honestly, the Lord just really began to speak to us about the biblical cities of refuge of old. Mm-hmm. And I even, like, when you talk about you moved your kids into this neighborhood and, like, there's no sacrifice. And here's the thing. When kingdom moves in, neighborhoods don't stay the same.
That's it.
Oh, yeah.
No. You know, it's like when kingdoms, when we turn the light on and Danny, you better stop. I have a story for everything.
I know. I got a couple stories I want you to tell.
Yeah. Yes. And you know what? I actually do want to mention that in 96, 97, I had a little community center in North Sacramento on Lerwick Road. And one night I ended up showing up there, 3351 Lerwick Road. Now, I will tell you this. We have three people on staff right now. One was a young lady who was 13 and in prostitution. Another little boy that had been, you know, assaulted and abused around the corner. Another, a drug dealer that ended up in San Quentin. All three of them are loving Jesus today and are actually on our team from back that. When. Yeah. So it's amazing how things just don't stay the same. And it's not because of us, but we see the presence of God. But turn the light on. 3351, it was a little two-bedroom, one-bath apartment. There was no lights on the street. It was super dark. So you know, back in the day, even like how they've done city development is like, we know in those kind of neighborhoods, you turn the lights on, you know, and so people can see. Well, there was no lights. And so we had actually put a light on the porch of our apartment where we ran our after-school programs. And I showed up one day. It had been pouring rain all night. And the manager lived on site. And she said, Rochelle, I have to tell you what happened last night. Mm-hmm. She said, I woke up and I heard just screaming and yelling and fighting. The young woman next door, she had two little children. And the youngest was 3 years old. And she said, I could hear body slamming against the wall. And, you know, back then, you live in such a close community. People are afraid of calling the police and different things mm-hmm. like that. And she said, but I came out, woke me up out of my sleep. And it was pouring rain, like 2 o'clock in the morning. And she said, I hear this little whimpering. And she said, I look downstairs and little Amante, who was three, who lived in the duplex next door, had ran over and he was in his little Spider-Man underoos and he was huddled underneath the light at the center. He was in the corner. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And, you know, I love what you said about turning the light on. I mean, Jesus just said, you know, be the light of the world. Like Jesus is the light of the world. Be that city on a hill that's not hidden. And I think it's like we often get so consumed about what to do rather than realizing that there has been a light that is that lives inside of us that we just get to turn on and don't hide.
Yeah.
And it's amazing what births.
And the biblical city of refuge is a place people ran to.
They ran to.
They ran to be safe.
Yes.
They knew it. It's built into the agreement of culture.
Yes.
If you run to a city of refuge, they will protect you no matter what.
Yes.
Yep.
No matter what.
Yeah. And some of the other things as we studied those cities of refuge was that there were actually scribes and priests and their job. There were six cities of refuge. If your listeners haven't studied it up, it's kind of an obscure little inner story of the people of Israel, but there were six cities of refuge, three on the west side of the Jordan, three on the east side of the Jordan, and they were purposefully placed all around Israel so that they were no more than a half day's journey. And the whole point was if you had the Avenger of Blood, you committed a crime and there was actually a legal action, they could kill you. I mean, there was a law, eye for an eye, and they lived by that. If you got to the city of refuge and you presented yourself before the high priest and you said, you know what, out there, I've got some trouble waiting for me. That death is knocking at my door. But if you place yourself under the high priest, you're safe. Your needs are met. The priest actually takes you into his home. Mm-hmm. He actually cares for you. Your legal needs are met. There's a stay of execution. There's all of these things. You're clothed. You're fed. You're all of this. And as long as you stayed within the walls of the city of refuge, you were protected. And the Avenger of Blood had no access to you.
Yep.
The caveat was is that once the high priest of that city of refuge dies, you were free to go. And I went, wow, that's exactly what we want to build. We want to build a place where people that are running for their life, they come into the walls of the people of God. They come into the walls and they present themselves before the high priest. And once they realize that their high priest has died, they're free. And that's been our whole, we didn't start off with a website saying any of that. That's what God's really just like, he's really.
We just believed it.
We heard that word, City of Refuge, just kept on coming and coming and coming. Oh.
So what did it look like in 2007, 2008? What would it look like to be a city of refuge? And that's what we attempted to do. And we started off with families. Then God tricked us, and we started a housing program, and that was a whole story. And we had 13-month period of time where young lady after young lady in the middle of the night knocking at our door, showing up at our community center, talking to – we get a call from a law enforcement officer. Somebody knew that the Ditmores had a soft spot for young girls looking for a place to stay. We put them on our couch. We let them live in our house. We moved our son out of his bedroom one day. I mean, just girl after girl after girl. It became kind of this redundant story, and we looked at each other and we're like, maybe God's trying to tell us something. Maybe there's got to be a better answer than this. Yeah. Our couch is not the and
I'm a couch man.
It just we use what we had. You know, it's God told Moses. He said, "What's in your hand?" Well, we had our house. Yeah. We had a couch, and we just offered a place to stay. And so
I remember that night. It was like the night before Christmas Eve, Cecilia. Yeah. She was a little girl in our neighborhood, and they were suspecting that her father had been trafficking her. She was 13 years old, and she would CPS would take her, but she was an avid runner. And Lauren was up finishing Bible college.
Yeah.
And the doorbell rings, and it's Cecilia in a little tank top, little tiny shorts, in the pouring rain, freezing cold in December. And she turns around, and there's this broke down bucket car that drops her off at our house. And she said, "It's okay. I told you. These are those church people I told you about. I told you they'd open up their door."
Yeah.
And, you know, that was just the beginning of the Lord just like awakening us to, okay, it's time for you to open up a door. Yeah. And God did. And it started with a little two-bedroom, 600-square-foot house that we this man rebuilt and turned into a dollhouse.
He's good with his hands.
Mm-hmm. He is.
Well, we didn't have any money to pay another contractor, so I knew how to do it. We were just like, let's use what we got.
Oh, my God.
I got a hammer.
You know, the nights that Lauren came home working till 2 o'clock in the morning, where he's like, the door is open. He has one arm behind the door, and he says, "Don't freak out. I'm going to be all right." You know, of the cuts
battle wounds.
And the-
It's been a journey.
Well, can you guys share some testimonies? I mean, you've been sprinkling them in as we've been talking, but, you know, we've heard ones from you, and I don't know, I want you to share whatever ones you feel like you should, but
I have one I'd like to ask about.
Okay.
Yeah.
You can ask.
I know the answer to it, but I want to hear it anyway.
Okay.
So you've been doing this for a while, and eventually the community begins to recognize the strength, the safety, the support that they're experiencing because you're there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And pretty soon, people who rise up in the neighborhood as I'll call successful, and they say, "I want to say thank you to you guys for what you're doing. So I'm going to point my resources at you." And there was a famous rapper. I don't know anything about rappers. I'm kind of not a rapper guy.
We've had, again, you work with kids and you stick around long enough, they grow up. And you know, what some may not think is success is that some of these kids continue on in the trajectory of negative, broken life, you know, and they've done stints in juvenile hall, and there's a gang culture there. It's a very old gang culture, and we've seen a lot of stuff happen, and some of these kids grew up and they're now 20, 25, 30 years old, and they've stayed in this lifestyle. And you know, we prayed a prayer a long time ago. I remember on a prayer walk, and I just said, "God, give me the biggest, baddest gangster in this neighborhood, the most notorious guy. Let me get that guy.
This is like the Godfather, right? The government structure that happens around these gangs in these neighborhoods is literally mafia kind of stuff.
Absolutely.
You know?
Absolutely.
You know, and so this is who you're talking about.
This isn't just a little street gang. This is in the prison system. Yeah. It's pervasive. Yeah, it's definitely, this is not like low level stuff.
So very interesting.
And you know, we some of our kids are traveling and with some rappers that are very popular. And I had buried one of the kids. I was asked to speak at a funeral. And there was a young kid named Gary, and there was probably 300 people that showed up, and it was a graveside attended funeral here in Sacramento. And we got done burying this young man and watch people grieve in their own way. And they're pouring bottles of Hennessy on the casket and throwing 20s and $100 bills down into the ground. And people are crying and you know, throwing their gang rags down in there, and just as out of respect. And then all of a sudden the scene changed, and two cars were driving over gravestones towards this group of 300 people that were surrounding the casket. Wow. I had just gotten done taking a picture with a couple of our boys, and there was a hit on some of the guys that were there, and about five guns five men with guns got out of those two cars and began to just shoot at the crowd, and people in the crowd began shooting back. And it was this pandemonium. And it may not sound like a long time, but 5 minutes of gunfire seems like 5 hours. And we were literally ducking behind gravestones, and there was this big brick pillar column that I hid behind. And I don't say this cheeky, but like I literally had like trauma. I had bad dreams and nightmares and some traumatic things that happened. But things slowed down, and I knew to call my wife, and I just said, babe, pray. It is crazy here. People are shooting at each other. And she goes, what is going on? She hears bullets going back and forth. I, at that moment, got done, and a bullet hit the brick column I was standing behind, and not the shrapnel, but the brick. It literally sprayed my face. And I'm just like, Lord, just help me get out of here. And I remember grabbing this grandma and grabbing kids, just trying to describe the pandemonium that was going on. But there was also this sense of peace that God had put me there in the middle of that. And there is this really well-known gangster. He's well-known in the community, and his name's Kuja. He was there, and that's not his real name, but that's just his street name. Mm-hmm. And he was there in the group. And while people just ran and dispersed, I just felt like we were supposed to like keep people safe and make sure. He looked at me with tears in his eyes when everything got done, and he said, You didn't run. You could have ran, but you didn't. Mm. Other people, and it wasn't, it's not making me the hero, but I really think that there was an opportunity where I could have, but I felt the Lord just had placed me there, and I didn't know anything else. I think I was probably too scared to run, but I was just trying to make the best of it.
It gets to your credit.
Right. You know? Yeah. And wow. we watched kind of some events transpire, and you know what could appear, you could be a threat because you're threatening a dope culture and all of that. But the good that they've seen happen in the community, we've been protected. We've had people have our back that has kept us from harm. Mm-hmm. There's so many great, crazy things and support from even some of these famous kids that they've donated money and given. And I'm just, they're.
Tell them about the Christmas.
Oh, you want the Christmas that we had a big Christmas event. I don't know that I want to say his name, but he's a very world renowned rapper. Yeah, yeah. He buys Christmas presents for a bunch of kids, and knew that we were a safe place. And there's a lot of gang violence happening, and normally they would do it in the park. His brother called us up, had our phone number, and asked if they could do it in our building.
Yeah.
And at first I was like, I don't know about that, because I mean, literally, people are dying. We're a target. That many people show up, but we just felt like there was a yes on it, and we said, "All right, we'll do it." And literally, our entire building was jam packed full of people, and he had bought Christmas presents for about 200 kids, and you know, regardless of whether or not you thought that was a good idea or not, but we've just seen this goodwill happen where hundreds of kids were blessed, and there was a camaraderie, and I believe God's going after him too. Yeah. You know, we haven't seen the end yet, but
exactly.
You know, Ephesians 6 talks about the weapons of our warfare.
Yeah.
And it was interesting because probably, you know, 6 months to a year before election season, when we saw a lot of disruption, a lot of different feelings around race and conflict. I was in City Hall. We had a situation in our own city that included the death of a young African-American man. And I remember Lauren and I in that room and just asking the Holy Spirit, like, I knew that I could not see according to what my eyes saw.
Yeah.
I could not hear according to what my ears would hear. Mm-hmm. I needed to hear from him.
Yeah. Yeah.
And he was so very clear in what he spoke to me, but also said the gospel of peace. And we forget about that weapon of the gospel of peace. Peace is not passivity.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
it is actually a weapon in authority. Yeah. And it's been amazing. As I was listening to you sharing that story, it was just so overwhelming because I remember that day. Yes. And I remember hearing the bullets on the phone. Mm-hmm. And yet I remember, like, I had such complete peace. Yeah. And I remember when Kuja came running, because he actually came back. We were hosting the repast. A lot of times in African-American culture, they do what's called a repast. And it's basically how you would do, like, a potluck or something like that.
It's the reception.
It's the reception. We had done, I think that year during COVID, we had done about 12 of major gang repasses where even SACPD and one of my very dear friends who's like a brother to me was our chief of police at the time, first African-American chief that Sacramento had ever had. Yeah. And he said, you know who's coming to your building, you know. And I'm like, I'm telling you, we have never, it's like people will come and like the angels of the Lord, but specifically for Lauren, I never want people to hear these stories and think like, wow, they're courageous or wow, they're heroes. It's like, no, just walk into who the grace that what God has made you to be and you just walk in it. And he is who is big. Yeah. He is who is amazing.
Yeah. Yeah.
He is the one who is the overcomer. But specifically for you, babe, like God has really given you authority over death. Mm-hmm. And sometimes we look at this and we think, oh my goodness, I was in this precarious situation where it's like, no, God actually put you time and time again to literally disrupt death. I remember this, I mean, several moments where that happened. One, driving off of the freeway, you stopping at Sac High in the middle of the night, you see a fight. And Lauren's not the one to just go to every fight. Felt prompted by the Holy Spirit.
You don't go to all the fights?
I'm not an ambulance chaser.
But
no.
Gets out of the car, and it's a group of women and a group of young girls. Mm-hmm. And Lauren's like, you need to leave before something happens.
I knew some of the girls that were involved in it from
and
the neighborhood.
As he says that, they literally pull out gun. Mm. And Lauren said, put that gun down. And he literally looked at the person and they took the gun and they put it down and they got in their car and left. Another time, it was one time, we've only ever had one experience like this in our lives. Thank you, Jesus. But we actually ended up in the middle of a shooting. There was an event at the park and a lot of gang members that were there. And we were driving by. We had pulled into the basketball court to kind of pull back out to go the other direction. And as we were parked right there going to move, there was a shooting. And one shooter was on one side of our park, of our car, and the other shooter was on the other side of our car. My kids were in the car. This was like 4 years ago.
Yeah.
And the guy pulls up a gun right next to my window. It's funny because I've been in the city for so long, 27 years, and I've never seen anything. This was the only time. I've never been there during a shooting. Yeah. I've never seen anything crazy. I've always
– You hear the aftermath
always,
of
like,
it.
Yeah, yeah. I've never. And in this moment
– This isn't what you do on your weekends.
No, it's just not. No. Mm-hmm. My son Zion sees an angel. He has seen angels since he was five. Mm-hmm. He sees an angel in human form on one side of our car blocking. And my husband says, put down that gun. And the guy literally puts down the gun, and he
let me put some context. Okay, the guy shoots across at the park, and this is the local gang's celebration every single Memorial Day, and they honor all of their fallen dead. Mm-hmm. And so there's a T-shirt that's produced with everybody that was shot and killed that gave their life for the life, and so they're doing this. There's 500 people in this gathering, and a rival gang shows up, and they start shooting across into this crowd. Now, in a crowd that size, there are a lot of guns. So there's multiple people running towards the shooter, and they're all pulling their guns. These guys are used to this. Mm-hmm. So the guy that's coming up, and we're literally in between, and he's right next to her window. These guys aren't, like, afraid to shoot. This is a normal, I hate saying normal, but this is a regular, it's just reaction. It's normal for them. And, I just looked at him. I said, put the gun down. It was like a Jedi mind trick. Not really, but let us go. No, but really it was. And I just said, let my family get out of here.
Yeah.
And he looked at me and he goes, all right. And I don't know if he knew us or whatever, but the Lord just, yeah. he's given us.
Yeah. He's giving you an assignment. Yeah.
There's an assignment and yeah. there's an authority. And uh-huh. I feel like specifically with Lauren, like we carry something so different. Yeah. But like there is a father, there is a priesthood, there is an authority yeah. to disrupt death. And I remember that day when Kuja came and he was sobbing, Lauren was still there. He said, he helped me get away. And he said, he stayed. And there was bullets in every car around, but ours.
Yeah.
There is not one bullet yeah. in there. And it's yeah. not that you walk into those spaces in your own flesh. You don't. But it's the testimony of the Lord. That's right. You know, I listen, I hear, I'm kind of like a kite. One day I'm driving to worship practice and I'm driving by the park and I see this one young man and the Holy Spirit said, go and speak over him. And I had a word for him and I saw angels and different things. And about 2 minutes later, he ends up getting shot.
Oh, wow.
And after I left, and he gets out of the hospital after being in a coma for a month. Oh, and he said, you came and warned me. Wow. You came and told me, you know. And wow. and even when you look at like operating in the prophetic in a different way without yeah. the mm-hmm. realm of the walls of the church, but really taking the prophetic into the world, it's about the testimony of the
yeah.
Lord,
yeah.
you know. But it's like we've got to – I love that concept of like – big God, little devil. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, it's like we've got to know with peace our authority. And, you know, it's amazing because that same event that Lauren was talking about, nobody outside of Oak Park Bloods gets those jerseys. And they made Lauren a hand-stitched one that, like, lives in his a couple
I
days.
I got my name put on it.
And everything. Right. But it's like
the red bandana.
I think about, like, the years of the Loud and so much racial unrest that we witnessed in our nation. And I just felt like we didn't feel it.
Yeah.
That was not our experience. It was not our story. It was not the story of others. And it just shows how much we can have ideas and opinions. But when we live life on life with people,
yeah.
we see God.
And,
you know?
And perfect love casts
yes.
out fear.
Yes.
You know, and that's we're out of time.
We are.
But
we have another one. Don't worry.
We do. I'm so glad that we're doing more than one of these. Yeah. And so everybody just hang on. We'll yeah. be back.
Yeah, I just think, you know, to wrap up this episode, just to, I mean, you've got to meet our friends. Thank you.
Yes.
I hope you would had fun because I know we did. And just the gift and assignment that you guys have to go into these dark places and be the light.
Yeah.
It just, I mean, I'm so grateful that, you know, all the lives that you're touching, you are literally like raising up little fireflies. Like you don't know where they're going to go.
Right.
And I just love that. And yeah. your ability to, you know, we say whole healthy families are going to save the world. And you believe that wholeheartedly. And mm-hmm. you're touching a whole world of families that don't believe that family is for them.
Yeah. Yeah.
And
yeah.
you are redefining that whole and healthy is available for them
yeah.
through the kingdom.
Come on.
And you are absolutely giving them that hope yeah. that the Lord wants
yeah.
for them.
Yeah.
So City of Refuge. .com.
How City of Refuge SAC.com. Sacramento.
City of Refuge SAC.com.
Yep.
Okay.
Yep.
So, again, we've talked about our partners and our donors. If you want to continue helping us help them or you want to help them directly, that's where you're going to go. And just hearing their stories and their heart, I mean, you're doing the things that we cannot do. Mm-hmm. And we're so grateful to really be able to pour into what you're doing. Yeah. So thank you.
Well, you've enabled us to be better at what we do and mm-hmm. help put language to some of the things that we've always seen work in people's lives. Yeah. You know?
Beautiful segue to our next podcast.
Yeah. So if you want to stick around, we got more. All right. We'll see you guys next time.
Thanks for listening. Never miss an episode of The Kylo Show by subscribing to Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or watch us on the Loving on Purpose YouTube channel. Don't forget to submit your questions and testimonies to thekyloshow.com. The Kylo Show is produced by Ali Armading, co-produced by Ashley Beck and Anna Hill, sound engineer and edited by Taylor Silk, and show promoter Christian Zamora. Don't forget, whole healthy families, gonna save the world.
She said, get out the chat room and clean my mind. The Glad Girl Group coming at you with a throwback jam. That was Glad Force Flex Drawstring Trash Bags featuring Pine Sol Original Scent. And that's better than all good. It's all Glad.